Good morning and welcome to Lynn Canal Voice, a public affairs program from KHNS Local News. I'm reporter Corinne Smith, and today we'll be talking about the one-year anniversary, the storm recovery effort in Haines, disaster anniversaries and mental health, and working through trauma, grief, and all the feelings that may come up on this anniversary. 1 year ago today, Haines' lives changed forever with what scientists estimated to be a once-in-a-200 to 500-year weather event and damaged roads, homes, and livelihoods. Most acutely, it took the lives of Janae Larson and David Simmons, as well as first responder Phil Reeves. Haines came together to respond to the storm damage last December and throughout this past year, on top of the COVID pandemic, economic hardships, and a loss of normalcy. So many stressors and many ways Haines has continued to pull together. There's been quite a bit of research on disaster anniversaries now, with so many communities experiencing extreme natural and human disasters. And researchers have identified disaster anniversaries to be important to do many things. One, acknowledge, normalize, and respond to painful memories and triggers. Recognize and remember losses. Stop and assess accomplishments, which we'll definitely do today in this hour. Recognize those involved in the recovery process. And promote resilience and community healing. So joining me today, I am very excited. We'll have three guests who were involved in and still are involved in the Haines storm recovery effort and also in mental health and are here to provide guidance and resources. With us in studio, we have Sarah Chapel with the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group and Development Director at Southeast Alaska Independent Living. Good morning.
Hi.
We have Matt Jones, a pastor and grief counselor with the Port Chilkoot Bible Church and a volunteer with the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group's Mental and Spiritual Health Committee. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
On Zoom, we're joined by George Kirchner, licensed professional therapist based in Fairbanks, a veteran, and a disaster mental health manager with the Red Cross. He's been deployed to dozens of disaster zones, including Hurricane Katrina, Paradise, California, after the wildfire there, and supported Haines residents' mental health last year virtually. Good morning, George.
Good morning.
Thank you all for being with us today. And for our listeners, if you have questions or thoughts or comments throughout this conversation this morning, call us at 766-2020, and my colleague Don will relay your messages to our guests. We'll do our best to kind of incorporate that today. So one of the important parts of disaster anniversaries is celebrating accomplishments and kind of taking time to take stock. And so I wanted to start with you, Sarah, to talk about the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group and maybe talk a bit first about how it formed last year and then its goals over those months of work and then progress to date.
Sure, definitely. Thanks, Corinne. So Matt and I co-chair the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group. And the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group, it was formed, within weeks of the disaster. It was days after the disaster that a group of social services leaders and volunteers got together and started talking about how we could help and what the long-term needs were going to be. And Matt and I had been working together for several months before that. Southeast Alaska Independent Living, Chilkat Valley Community Foundation, the Haines Ministerial Association, our tribal governments, and many others had been meeting for months as part of a volunteer network that was responding to COVID and making sure that individuals in the community had what they needed to be safe at home. If they had a diagnosis, that they had, you know, volunteer support and mental health support through the months of COVID. And so we knew each other. And that sort of trust and understanding had been established. And so that was kind of the natural place to start for organizations who knew we were going to be needed in the long recovery efforts moving forward. And we had never faced a disaster of this magnitude as a group or really as individuals. And so we looked to a lot of partners actually outside of Haines who had that experience and kind of wrapped mm-hmm. their arms around us very, very early on to say, look, there's a way to do this. It's happened in other communities in Alaska and nationwide. It's called a long-term recovery group, and we will help you. So wow. The partners in the state of Alaska's VOAD, which is the Volunteer Organizations Active in Disasters, they sat with us and helped us form that structure to make sure that the work that we did to aid individuals in their recovery, that it was comprehensive, that it was fair, inclusive, and that the community could really understand the goals of where we wanted to go to help individuals in their recovery, so that it wasn't just a willy-nilly process, which was honestly kind of how we were feeling at first. You know, it is our as caring individuals, we want to do everything we can as quickly as possible to help each and every person who needs us. And we needed that expertise from outside of our little group to say, look, it actually makes sense right now to slow down a little bit, to focus on your organization, to make sure that you have the right partners at the table, so that in the weeks and months and years to come in this recovery, that you have the resources and the strength and the structure that you need to adequately respond and recover. And that was it was a real blessing for us. We had help from statewide leaders at Salvation Army that still sit with us as board members on the long-term recovery group. Our partners at the state of Alaska have been incredible and have been meeting every single week with us to help guide our way and point resources our way when we need them. And also national partners from FEMA and other organizations who have sat with us, paid attention, and helped to point us to resources when we needed them. So so the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group, the local leadership comes from a number of organizations, including Salvation Army, SAIL, the Haines Ministerial Association, Chilkat Valley Community Foundation, Chilkoot Indian Association. And and it's really it's an effort to bring together the organizations and tribes that have resources to contribute to recovery, to make sure that we are using those resources wisely, that we're not duplicating efforts, that we're helping each organization fairly determine the greatest need and the best response to each individual case. And what that has looked like is it's been a lot of meetings. So
right.
Every single Tuesday, we meet as a board to touch base and to go through the various committees and make sure that we have what that they have what they need to move forward. And so we have a case management committee that does really the bulk of the really, really deep work of looking individually at every single household that has come to us or one of our organizations to figure out what do they need, what resources do we have to offer now, what are the gaps that need to be filled, and how are we going to do that? And so the case management committee is really the heart of how we do that work, And it's a science, right? There's a scoring matrix to look through all of these questions and figure it out. There are we had to make sure that our confidentiality understandings between organizations were really strong so that we could feel secure in having these conversations in a way that that were secure and respected the needs and the privacy of each survivor, of each household. And I just have been very, very impressed and very, very grateful to the case management committee, especially for it's very hard work. And every single week it's looking at these questions, and there's really no cookie cutter solution to each household and their needs. It's very, very individualized, and that comes from the deep work of that case management group.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the needs have varied so much by household, like you said, and the Haynes Long-Term Recovery Group has been able to kind of bring resources together. I'm looking at your one-year progress report. It's pretty incredible. Total distributed funds is $1.31 million to the community, and assistance has been home rehabilitation, different home repairs, also like food and rental and utility assistance. It's really crucial. And then also housing. It seems like housing is the biggest kind of difficulty in Haynes. And here, can you talk a bit about like kind of the existing priorities now and the needs still in the community?
Absolutely. So right now, we have a total of 131 cases of households mm-hmm. that have requested or received assistance through the long-term recovery group. That does include households who need temporary housing. For instance, we have 7 households that remain displaced. That's down from 23 at the 6-month
wow.
mark.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect that about half of that 131 is still in need of some additional assistance. So the housing assistance primarily comes from the state of Alaska and their individual assistance program. We are very lucky in the state of Alaska to have an individual assistance program that responds to disasters in our state. Most states do not have that. They rely on FEMA. And because Alaska has this program for small communities where the individual impact doesn't rise to the level of a FEMA response disaster, the state of Alaska is able to come in and fill that gap. And so we're very, very grateful for their work. They have their own case management group that works with individuals to make determinations about housing assistance. So that's could be rental assistance while they're waiting to get back into their home or make a permanent determination of where they're going to be. Also, some limited assistance with repairing their homes and replacing essential items in the home. For instance, if you lose your heating system or your refrigerator, those kind of items. But what we found early on is that the housing assistance, especially, it didn't cover what folks really needed. And we know that rentals are expensive in Haynes, and the Haynes Long-Term Recovery Group was there and ready to respond to fill the gap in what the state of Alaska was able to provide. And they have a formula that they have to follow. So they followed that formula, and the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group was there to make sure that we had the resources to fill that gap so that every single household that needed that temporary housing was safely housed for as long as possible. And that assistance from the state of Alaska is going to run out in about 6 months. It's an 18-month program. And so we're working really, really hard to make sure that those additional households that are still receiving temporary housing assistance are moving towards a permanent solution.
Wow, yeah. And something, too, after disasters, like people's needs aren't really continuous. Like different needs will kind of crop up. You know, with the weather changing, maybe certain like household damage or different kind of needs pop up in the household. Are people also able to kind of get back in touch with you and the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group for different needs that come up? And what's the best way to do that?
That is such a good question, Corinne. It's really true. And it's something that we heard early on in the process that, hey, you know, you are going to see cases come up later on that you haven't necessarily heard about first thing. And we didn't, I don't know that we really believed them. We thought, well, we're doing such a great job of getting the word out and everybody knows that we're here. And we've seen 11 new cases, cases of need since October.
Mm-hmm.
And
one just last week.
One, exactly, yes. Yeah. One just last week. And so that could be a household that thought they could handle it on their own in the beginning, for instance,
right.
Thought, you know, we can figure this out. We have the either personal resources or community help that we can deal with this on our own, and then realize, you know what, the task is just too daunting. It is too big for us. We do need help. Others maybe didn't realize the damage until the weather changed again. And
right.
And then in the fall, when it started to rain, realized, oh, wow, we actually do have some drainage issues that we didn't realize. Our foundation is not as stable as we thought it was. And so those are things that maybe people just didn't realize the scope of what they were looking at in their individual cases until some additional time passed. And so we are looking at cases, for instance, like I was saying, with foundation damage that are significant and are going to need some real resources and you know, community know-how to figure out how to make sure we get these properties solid and safe again. Drainage is another big one, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So the Haynesborough and FEMA are responsible for the public infrastructure, right? So those are the roads we drive on and the plant that brings your fresh water to your house and flushes away your not so fresh water, right? But there's of course individual issues that we each deal with on our own properties that don't fall under that same guideline, and so those are also cases that have come to us mostly through Chilkoot Indian Association, saying, look, you know, our driveway is barely drivable. We're seeing additional water, it's running under our home again, or the
right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
the entire water table, perhaps in some instances shifted following the disaster. And so we as a community have been very, very lucky that CIA received a grant from HUD early on in this process, which has allowed them to step up really an incredible degree and respond to some of these driveways and drainage and construction needs that otherwise we I don't know that we would have been able to accomplish. It's been pretty remarkable.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So moving kind of to the invisible side of things and the mental health impacts, I want to bring in George Kirchner, licensed professional therapist based in Fairbanks. And George, can you tell us a bit about your experience responding to disaster areas, and what do individuals and communities go through immediately after a disaster, immediately after a disaster, and then kind of in the months afterward?
It's a very typical thing that you can plot, and there's some very good illustrative charts. You have life as it goes on before the disaster, and then you have the impact, and you have a tremendous amount of energy. People become quite heroic trying to do the rescue, as you saw, and everybody works together very, very hard. And that'll peak out, and then it kind of drops off a few days, weeks, and people get disillusioned. Well, we should have had this, we should have had that, we could have done that, all kinds of things. This phase passes, and you get to the anniversary where people review and they get kind of disgruntled at times. But after that, things start on an uphill swing as we begin to get our feet back on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
For an individual, basically the shock of what happens is there. And hopefully, typically for the Red Cross worker in the field, they want to encounter them and get the person functioning again, get them back on their feet so they're not standing there in shock, get them moving towards some goal, get them to safety, get them to housing, get them to rehydrate, get them some food. So we have the shelters. We have sometimes, I think in Haines, we utilize hotels, okay? Any place we can get people to safety, then we can assess and see what their further needs are. Do they need clothes? Do they need medicines, eyeglasses, so forth and so on? And you begin to work with that. All along the way, the caseworkers, the people who are in the field, are gathering people around the person to give them support. And the most useful support is often just ears, just listening to the person's story. Let them tell what happened without making comment or judgment or what have you. Get it out. And the same thing begins to occur at the anniversary as we begin to reminisce and recall and what have you. Feelings are going to be coming up in our body. That's where we're going to experience our emotions. Our brain just puts a label on what our body feels. So basically, giving a person a chance to listen. People may have not had a chance to tell their story at an anniversary time, may really want to tell their story. Just listen without comment. The idea of another human being taking the time to listen to a person tell their tale. It may be a heroic tale. It may be a tragic tale. It may be a terrible tale.
Mm-hmm.
Still, just listening validates that person's existence as a human being,
right,
and gives them the resources and strength to move forward.
Right. Yes. Thank you for that. I want to bring in Matt now to talk about the Haines community and kind of what you've been seeing from survivors. There can be a lot of different feelings that come up at the anniversary, and I mean, to be honest, I've been talking to people around town this past kind of week, trying to, you know, asking where people are at, and multiple people just burst into tears. And so I think there's a lot of stoicism in Haines, a lot of strength, and then under the surface, there's a lot of unprocessed grief and trauma. So, yeah, Matt, can you talk about your work here in Haines and what you've been seeing Haines residents go through?
Yeah, absolutely. The you know what George said, there are some very predictable cycles, and the fact that we are you're gonna have that initial verge of action and the first response. That's the stuff you see on the news at 6 o'clock. But then you don't follow up after that shooting or that storm or whatever incident. You don't realize that there's months and months and oftentimes a life of processing that and responding to that in either a healthy or an unhealthy way. And everybody's going to be different depending on their role in that situation. If you're a football fan and you look at the Super Bowl, if you miss the final catch that had the chance to win it, that's going to stick with you for a long time in a heavy way. If you made the wrong call as a referee, if you're just the guy sitting home on the couch, you already remembered that there was a Super Bowl, but you're probably going to get over it in a lot different way. In Haines, the entire community was affected in many different ways. You mentioned the people, Janae and David's family and Phil Reeves and Nene, Morning Phil. Johnny Willard from Klukwan passed away that same week, and it was not related to the storm, but the fact that Johnny passed away during that week, we remembered him at the memorial down at the harbor, his family's going to associate that. And we remember and recognize that as a small, tight community in Haines. And so I think it is important for members that while there's that pattern that we know to expect, each individual is different, and we need to be understanding that we will heal in different places and in different ways at different times. Those that I've seen successful in Haines so far have been in so many different ways. Those that have come out, there have been people in regards to just listening, as George mentioned. You know, this last winter and through the time, you saw many people just visiting in coffee shops. The idea that you could get somebody to go and sit down and just share a little bit, and one week they're going to tell the initial part of the story, the next week they're going to talk about how that's still hanging on a little bit. And over two or three discussions over coffee, you may find that 80% of us are able to process a lot of these feelings with a friend or a loved one, and then we can move on in a healthy way. But then there are also those that it's much deeper than that. It's going to take a lot more than just a few talks over coffee. Some people succeeded by getting away for a little while. Families did not know what was going to have to happen, and so they went south and stayed with friends or loved ones, and that was needed. Some people, I rejoiced in the summertime to see that some of those affected were in Hawaii or in Florida or somewhere else where they went and took a break that was very well deserved and needed. Not just those who were impacted by the storm in their homes, but also the first responders, the people working for the borough, the people, the counselors, the people in the LTRG. We've had to remind ourselves, hey, it's healthy to step away from this sometimes and look at some of the other things going on. And again, different successes. Some people took more resources to help, and they had never ask for resources and assistance before. It took them a period of time to learn that that's okay, and that they've been the one giving all this time. It's okay to receive. And actually, when you go through that, whether it's a health crisis or a weather crisis or a financial crisis, actually, when we come through that a year later, it teaches us so much about empathy and being good to others and maybe viewing others' perspective in a little bit broader way. And so those are ways that I think overall I saw people succeed. Two last things. One was serving. There were people from the very beginning who were heavily impacted. One man who was displaced from his home and is still not back to his home was shoveling snow the first night at the American Legion when survivors were being brought in. He was outside shoveling snow. Part of that was just his shock. He needed something to be involving his mind as he was trying to process the reality of what happened. But that was a demonstration that some people, as they're processing grief and recovering, serving others is a way to help us focus not just on our own issues and challenges, which are very real, but it also helps us realize that others around us have those circumstances also. And that while sometimes life is simply going to be hard, and it's not because of you, it's not because of anyone else, it's because we're human and we live on earth. And realizing that and helping others cope with that and serving whether it was through Team Rubicon, whether it was through your church, whether it was helping donate to the program that Janae's family has, raising money for the playground. All of those are small ways that can help people be active and slowly heal. And the last thing, Corinne, you and I talked about yesterday on the phone, is some normalization. You know, I was talking to Sarah just before the show about how you're doing, and I told her to honestly, I'm tired. It has been a long 2 years, and I moved into the ministry here in Haines 2.5 years ago, and I thought I was going to be semi-retired. I do not feel semi-retired. I feel like I've been on a second 20-year career in 2 years. I think it's important for us as we look back at COVID, as we look at inflation, as we look at life in general and dealing with weather, that some normalcy is it's comfortable, to be frank. And so if you get a chance to be normal, to do that, the small at the Skagway came over and played middle school basketball.
Yes.
I never thought that a girls' middle school basketball game would do so much to uplift my spirits.
Yes, that was so fun. Yeah.
So
absolutely. Thank you for that. And we will actually be talking about volunteer opportunities later, a bit later in this hour. But right now we're going to take a short music break to reset, and we'll be back with you in about a minute. Welcome back to this hour of a special edition of Lynn Canal Voice from the KHNS Local News. I'm Corinne Smith, and I'm very happy to be joined in studio with Sarah Chapel with the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group, as well as Matt Jones, also with the Long-Term Recovery Group, and a pastor and grief counselor with the Port Chilcoot Bible Church. And on Zoom, we have George Kirchner, a licensed professional therapist based in Fairbanks, and a disaster mental health manager with the Red Cross. So, George, jumping off of our conversation about the feelings that may come up on this disaster anniversary, and some people will also not have a strong reaction, but other people will be dealing with feelings of perhaps disillusionment or even anger, fear, depression. And you and I talked yesterday about, and you mentioned something, the way you put it was really, really on point. You said that difficult feelings can get locked up and irritate. Can you kind of elaborate on that and talk about ways of processing these difficult feelings?
This is Christmas time. And you might notice in ourselves that in the weeks before Christmas, we feel kind of different, perhaps energized more, and perhaps begin to wonder if we're going to do our Christmas shopping the last minute, so forth and so on. Just like we did last year and the year before. When we have a disaster anniversary coming up, the weeks before, we become aware of it, we become noticeable, and we begin to have different behavior reactions. We begin to perhaps be more quiet or more active. Either way, these things are normal, and we're beginning to remember and be aware that our body is our emotion. Okay, constantly we're feeling something, and so we may begin to feel a little upset, a little angry, a little irritable. Maybe we'll have our stomach will act up a little bit. Subtle things that will begin to happen. Okay. If we pay attention to those and just say, okay, fine, let's get ourselves calm and what have you. Probably one of the most important things that happens is when we approach an anniversary, especially of a trauma of any kind, is that we forget to breathe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's silly, but breathing is one of the first steps in any therapeutic process, okay? Most of the time, we take a deep breath and we lift our shoulders off our diaphragm, okay? Well, that gives us some relief. What we really need to do is practice to breathe like we did when we were small infants, down into our belly, okay? When we take a breath, and it's hard to get to do that again, to be able to make our belly button move rather than our chest, okay? But take a deep breath down into our belly. This gets more oxygen to our lungs, and the diaphragm massages all of our organs. Take a deep breath this way, and you can lower your blood pressure a couple of points almost immediately. You can lower your anxiety level, that tension level, okay? And we want to be especially aware where those tension levels are in our body, our shoulders, our arms, our feet, our legs, okay? And just relax those areas. Breathe into them. Let them breathe out, if you will, okay? So thoughts, memories, and what have you come up. And then it might even stir up memories of traumas long ago, okay?
Right.
That's okay. The idea is to accept them. Just let them come, okay? Like bubbles in a tube, they'll flow up. Okay, you don't have to pay any attention to them. Just let them go, okay? This is an important thing, just to accept whatever is happening to us. If we resist it, it becomes like a pebble in our shoe, okay? It's something that wants to be noticed. And that pebble in the shoe will feel like a giant rock until we dump it out and figure it's about the size of a grain of sand. But until we get rid of it, let it out, get it out of our shoe, it's going to be difficult to walk comfortably. Okay, but once we do, we're off. But we become afraid of our fear. Okay, and we don't have to be. We can face it. We survived the thing, we survived this, and we're going to win more. It is a strange phenomenon that people who win the lottery have just as much stress as someone who experienced a major trauma. It's weird because it talks about change, and human beings don't like change. We want stability. Okay. And that's what we work for as first responders, what we work for as recovery persons and long-term support, not only for us, for our people, but for ourselves. Yeah. And it's important that we, like the first thing we do with children is to get their routine back. Same thing with adults. We need our routine back. We need the coffee shop. We need church. We need to have all those things that we did before in place. And as we get them in place, we're able to relax more and empty the shoes of our rocks.
Right, right. Thank you for that. I appreciate the physical analogies because mental health, it can be considered, well, it is physical. It is manifested in these physical ways. And like you said, intention in the body, even, you know, kind of behavioral outbursts. But also activities can be very healing. And like you said, normal activities like the coffee shop, seeing friends, going to church. And as I was doing this research, I found a helpful resource in navigating these kind of anniversary reactions. And it recommended engage in coping activities that have worked for you in the past. And, of course, talk about it if you can. Also, one interesting one was limit media viewing. And I want to take responsibility as Haynes reporter for, you know, my coverage can bring up very difficult feelings for people. And if you if that is too much for you, like, it's okay to turn off the media. And that's probably the only time I'll say this on KHNS. But it is okay to do that and to take care of yourself in that way. Another one is don't compare yourself to other people, because everyone is going through their own reaction. And you know, it, like you said, it takes some time and some patience and breathing to move through this difficult period. George, I also wanted to ask you something I've noticed in my reporting experience. And I wasn't here last year, but I have covered disasters, specifically wildfires in California. And something that I've seen is a lot of survivor's guilt. And this feeling of I shouldn't have these difficult emotions. I shouldn't feel this way because I didn't have it so bad. Can you talk a bit about that?
Survivor's guilt is most common, especially among combat veterans, okay, who come back from the war zone and have left buddies behind. Basically, that talks about events that occurred long before we ever entered into the trauma, okay, from our childhood very often. The thing is that it gives us a sense of control, okay? When a trauma happens, when a disaster happens, there is no control, okay? And we are faced with a reality that you just need to run. You can't fight. You can't freeze, okay? If you freeze, you're burnt to a crisp. If you run, who knows where you're going to go, and you can't fight, okay? So basically what happens is when we do get out of it, okay, we say we shouldn't have, or our self-esteem is lowered, okay? Mm-hmm. Our anger is suppressed, okay, and all this other stuff. We want to rail at the universe. Why did you do this to me? Oh, yeah, the universe answers back, well, why not? Okay. It's a guilt thing. When we become aware of it, again, that's when we want to reach out and talk about that, especially with a pastor, with your mental health, with your friend, with your family members. You know, I feel so guilty. And you begin to ask, well, what's the purpose of that guilt? Basically, somehow or another, you believe that you have violated one of your own personal values. Okay. I should have done something, but I didn't. Okay. And in reality, you did everything you should have done because your goal was to survive. If you didn't want to survive, you would not have. So you accomplished the goal, and you feel guilty because you did, which is a strange thing. Getting it out, talking about it, looking at it from a logical standpoint or just a sharing standpoint, you can then make a goal of, okay, so I survived. The reason I survived was to tell my buddy's story. The reason I survived was to help others who have survived and perhaps prevent this from happening again, okay? So it can be a useful tool as well as one that's a bit debilitating. The key is to recognize, accept, and move forward through it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you for that. So we've been talking about kind of ways of processing, and one of those ways is getting active. And I know that Haynes is very active and very committed. And so, Sarah, what are some ways that people maybe can volunteer or get involved with the Haynes Long-Term Recovery Group or any of the activities going on right now?
Sure. So, we all know the people of the Upper Lincoln Canal are incredibly generous in spirit, in their time, with their dollars. And it's just a true thing, right? Whether you're in Clequan or Skagway or Haynes or Mosquito Lake, people are givers here. And so we're just lucky to have organizations that rely on volunteers all over town. And some of them, maybe we haven't had an opportunity to get to know as well, or we didn't even know that they existed until this disaster struck. So for me, one of the things that that really helped me in the days following the disaster was seeing the Red Cross car that was parked in front of the Aspen Hotel, and just knowing that the Red Cross was here for us was incredibly comforting. And I did not need them. My home was safe, but it felt so good to know that they had our backs. And yeah. Another one was when the Salvation Army brought their food trailer, and it was parked at the fire hall. And to know, it's like, we know Salvation Army's here, right? We know Captain Kevin and Captain Serena are here for us, and they're gonna they're right there every day. But to know that larger organization, that they saw us and they were responding to me, just was, it meant so much. And the Red Cross is actually back this week. They're here touching base with folks all over town, and the Red Cross and Salvation Army rely on volunteers to get their work done, whether it's throughout Alaska, throughout Southeast Alaska, or right here in Haynes. And Salvation Army and Red Cross are going to be at the hamburger feed at the American Legion on Friday from 5 to 6:30, and they're there just to answer questions about what their organizations do, and also to sign up volunteers if that's something that you think you want to be involved with. And both organizations have incredible training opportunities and ways to get involved on a local level, and also responses in other places. And so that's the American Legion at 5 o'clock on Friday. That's pretty cool. So the disaster program manager for Southeast Alaska, Britta Tonneson, is here in town. Folks probably met Britt when a year ago when she was here, and also her volunteer counterpart from Juneau, Lauren Jones, is here. So you could have an opportunity to talk with both of them. Another cool organization that I honestly did not know about until just a few months ago is Team Rubicon. Mm-hmm. And Team Rubicon, people might remember, is the volunteer organization that showed up in Haynes in September and put an incredible amount of volunteer muscle into helping us clear the debris from households and dispose of that disaster debris.
Right. Incredible progress in a short amount of time.
It was amazing. So mm-hmm. Team Rubicon and a host of other volunteers and staff people made it possible to remove 440,000 pounds of disaster-related household and other debris from the community and get that disposed of at the landfill. It was an incredible effort, and learning about Team Rubicon and how they show up in communities and help in disaster response is really impressive. They have volunteers all over the country, including right here in Alaska, and they're one of their volunteer leaders who actually lives in Fairbanks is here in Haynes this this week, and they're working on recruiting volunteers. Our very own Sylvia Hines is a gray shirt, a Team Rubicon volunteer, in addition to being our very incredible coordinator for the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group. And Sylvia's signing up volunteers, and it doesn't require any time to be a Team Rubicon volunteer. You can you sign up, and then you can decide to volunteer when it works for you. And we were really it was very impressive to see the level of commitment and skill and just love that the volunteers put into their work. We were really lucky to have them here, and they're sticking with us. They're helping us through some rebuilding efforts as well in town, and so that's just a very, very cool thing. And you can call Sylvia, our long-term recovery group coordinator. She also works at CIA. Her number is 766-2323, extension 124. And if you want to be a Team Rubicon volunteer, or if you have resources that you think will aid in the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group's efforts, we do rely on volunteer muscle and time and dollars to get this work done. So you can also email us at HainesLTRG@gmail.com. If you have ideas, if you have questions, or you just want to talk, we can definitely put you in touch with the right person.
That's great. And Matt, can you tell us about the mental health resources from the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group? It sounds like there's a really incredible kind of support service going on right now, connecting folks.
There is. And those, you know, the resources are going to vary based on what your needs are. We've already talked about one big way that you can, our best resource are you as individuals, being a good neighbor. We talked about a lot of times that 70% solution is simply going to be having a couple cups of coffee and talking through. So that person that you talk to on the street that starts crying, they need to talk that through. And as you do that once or twice, that may be just fine. There's going to be other times where it's important, especially for those of us in the spiritual side. We make sure from a professional standard to recognize there's a time where it's beyond spiritual encouragement or some of these general processes and techniques that help to get professional help. And you know, I went through that in a 26-year career in the Coast Guard. I went through that mid-career, and it reflected a lot of what George was talking about, feeling uber responsible. I had to fix everything. And that's a lot in Haines. We largely feel isolated, and in different parts, people feel they're responsible. It's their fault that we couldn't help quicker. It's their fault that we couldn't get more resources up here. It's their fault that we didn't get the organization in place quicker, or that the road's not fixed. You name it, they're responsible. And so it's important to recognize there's a time when we need professional assistance. There are a number of different resources for that. Some of those that are initial entry points are 800 numbers. The Disaster Distress Helpline is out there, and it's at 1-800-985-5990. There is also an Alaska-specific care line that's available online at carelinealaska.com, carelinealaska.com.
And we'll be sure to post all these numbers and links on the website on khns.org after this show.
Great. Mm-hmm. And then the last search offers counseling here in town. They are absent a provider all of the time here in town right now, but have telehealth resources available. And similar, Bartlett had an amazing presence at the school early on right after the event, and has continued to maintain that connection with the school, and has helped a lot of individuals, a lot of Haines people, practice telehealth with Bartlett. And Bartlett's going through their own transition time right now, unfortunately, but they also are looking at hoping to open an office up here that will have staff. It's a little bit it feels in Haines, it can feel a little bit right now where it's hard to connect to that. And that's where we'd like to offer our help in the Ministerial Association and as part of the Long-Term Recovery Group in the Mental and Spiritual Health Committee, is not to fix everybody that calls. That's not my role. It can be some individuals, but largely, if you feel like you're having trouble finding the resource, call us at 314-2429 is my cell phone, and I know where those resources are at, and we can help with the finance of it. We can help you just make the connection. If you want a female counselor via telehealth that was raised in the Midwest, we can go through those check blocks to get you the person that you might feel most comfortable with getting that help.
That's great.
The help's there. Please reach out for it.
Wow, what a great resource. And in the last minute here, can you tell us about the memorial event that will be this Saturday? It's going to be Saturday, December 4th, starting at 1:30 p.m. at the Boat Harbor parking lot, followed by a walk to Picture Point. And tell us a bit about that.
That's exactly right. And this has been a program that the Chilkat Valley Community Foundation is kind of working as the organizers of it. Ann Myron and Liz Haywood have done a lot of great work with various groups in town that are involved. We will have a couple of songs and a prayer and a few comments down at the harbor, similar to what we had after the Christmas parade last year. And that will serve as kind of a somber memorial time for starting the anniversary. That'll open us up to a time of reflection, and as we walk, or there will be rides available around to Picture Point. And then once we get to Picture Point, we'll talk about the mayor will get the chance to speak, and we'll focus a little bit more on the opportunity to look at where we're going from here, what's been accomplished, and have a dedication of some neat things, a community table. There are still some work in progress going on some benches that are going to commemorate the loss.
Yeah, made by the high school shop class.
Yeah, really neat stuff. And so it's going to be a time of both reflection and memory, but also optimistic, positive. Where do we go from here? That will also lead into the lighting of the fort later on that evening. So I hope you can come out.
That's great. Thank you so much. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. But I want to thank you so much for joining us. And to our guest, that was Matt Jones, a pastor with the Port Chilkoot Bible Church and with the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group, as well as Sarah Chapel. Thank you so much. And on Zoom, we had George Kirchner, who is a licensed professional therapist based in Fairbanks and a disaster mental health manager with the Red Cross. Thank you so much, George, for joining us.
You're welcome.
And I want to give a special thanks to Jasper Posey on the board, to Dawn Drodos for all her help organizing and producing this segment. And thank you to all our listeners for tuning in and joining us on KHNS. This has been a special program of Lynn Canal Voice and will be posted online later today along with those resources you heard. I'm Corinne Smith. Thank you so much for joining us and hope you have a great day.